Welcome to Radio at Firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters. Firehouse.com brings you the leaders of the nation's fire, rescue, and EMS services, the top columnists and educators, and today's most important issues, headlines, and comments. Listen right on your desktop or download and listen on the go to Firehouse.com.
Okay, welcome to podcast number 4 from Near Miss Listen and Learn. Thanks to Firehouse.com for making the podcast process a reality for us here at the Firefighter Near Miss Reporting System. I'm your moderator, John Tippett. I'm Battalion Chief with Montgomery County Fire Rescue Service, and I also serve as a project manager for the International Association of Fire Chiefs, currently working on the National Firefighter Near Miss Reporting System. Joining me today is the voice of our reports is Todd Clist. Todd is a captain with the Sterling Volunteer Fire Company in Loudoun County, Virginia, and a program manager for the IFC's Wildland-Urban Interface and Interstate Mutual Aid programs. For more information on those, get on the IFC website. In this particular edition of Listen and Learn, this is the second of the five-part series we're doing that focuses on crew resource management issues identified in near-miss reports. We're going to be talking about the CRM component of decision-making, highlighting reports that represent positive outcomes that were the result of the good use of decision-making, and then reports that would have benefited from a more effective use of the decision-making principle. Today's reports can be found by using the keyword search feature on the home page, entering the keywords good decision or good decision-making or bad or poor decision-making, and you also have the option of entering the report number directly using the report number search feature. Crew resource management is a force multiplier that capitalizes on the use of all resources, human, hardware, and information. The earliest mention that we can find for the use of crew resource management in the fire service comes from the Campbell County, Wyoming Fire Department. Their department adopted it as an operational principle in the mid-1990s and continue to use it today. Two members of Campbell County, Tom Lubnow and Randy Okray, published a book called Crew Resource Management for the Fire Service in 2004. That text is still available. Crew resource management originated in the mid-1970s in the commercial aviation industry. It was created to improve performance and mitigate the effect of errors committed in the cockpit after studies identified that error was the leading cause of air crashes. There are other industries out there that have already enthusiastically adopted the principles of crew resource management. They report similar performance improvements in their respective industries along the same lines as the airline industry. They include the military, transportation, and medicine. This month's focus is on the element of decision-making. Of course, in the fire service, decision-making is based on the concept that actions need to be taken quickly to mitigate emergencies. While the hazmat side of our house has reverted to a traditional decision-making model that encourages slow, deliberate approaches, much of the rest of the fire service still practices a model that encourages rapid processing of factors and quick action. There was a gentleman named Gary Klein that worked directly with fire officers, identifying that the process firefighters used to decide which actions to take was based on a rapid cognition process that relied on a recall of similar or previous experienced events. Klein coined the term recognition-primed decision-making, or RPDM. In its simplest form, since we're in an abbreviated process here, it means that we look at the emergency situation, quickly compare it to what we have previously experienced, formulate an action plan based on the experience and the movie that runs through our head about how this will have an outcome, and then we go to work. RPDM is a four-step process that includes a prototype match, which is where you look at the incident you're facing and compare it to your base, the expectations, the evaluation of what goes on, and then finally implementation. This whole process takes place anywhere from milliseconds to 2 seconds, as long as our experience base has a match. Of course, the harder it is to find a match, the harder it is to take action. So you should check out Klein's groundbreaking work in this arena and be sure to expand your reading by including reading on naturalistic decision-making and cue-based decision-making. So, of course, good decision-making is a mix of information, experience, and knowledge. One of the points that has surfaced in a number of the works that have been done is experience can be improved by a number of methods other than actually being there to experience the event. So one of those principal things that have come to light is that through the use of case studies and modeling, we've been able to improve experience levels for firefighters and fire officers. So once we go through this process through case studies, modeling, and some of the other processes that are out there, tabletops and talking to each other, we found that firefighters have benefited in the same way that military commanders did prior and also firefighters from the past. We become better decision makers, and by becoming better decision makers, we reduce the impact of error. As we go through our reports today, remember that the narrator is not the report submitter, and in some cases the report has been condensed so that we can focus just on the decision-making aspects. The reports from firefighternearmiss.com offer a wealth of opportunity for further training, but in this particular environment we're just going to look at one facet. Our first report details an event that takes place between a driver and an officer. It's report number 07-929. It was submitted by a firefighter from a combination fire department in FEMA Region 3, and the reporter was involved in the event. Here's Todd Close.
We responded for the report of a fire in the basement of a mill. My crew of three was tasked with checking the structure for extension. While climbing an exterior wooden staircase to check for fire and smoke in the room above the fire floor, the decking of the staircase gave way and a firefighter fell through. Fortunately, a joist prevented him from falling completely through and then dropping 15 feet to the ground while holding tools and a water can. The firefighter was grabbed by his fellow crew members before he tipped over and continued to fall. The firefighter made poor decisions in not checking the structural stability of the staircase prior to climbing it. My lessons learned. Checking the stability of all outdoor decking and staircases should always be done and not taken for granted based on a mere visual inspection. This situation could have been prevented by sounding the stability of such structures and then minimizing the number of personnel on structures at any given time. It is also important to keep in mind the large increase in weight firefighters carry when wearing gear, SCBA, and carrying tools.
Thanks, Todd. The reporter notes here that there was some poor decisions that were made, and I think the one caveat we have to put here is that poor decisions are usually a result of a lack of information, a failure to recognize some aspects of our job, a complacency that we run into, norms that when we practice activities time and time again in environments and nothing goes wrong for us. And then also we have a concept or a phenomenon known as the normalization of deviance. And in that particular environment, where we make mistakes time and time again, but since there's no negative outcome, we start to get complacent about those actions and forget some of the basics like sounding floors and making sure that the area is safe before we advance. There's also something known as the Pied Piper mentality. When the first person walks through, then everybody else follows. In this particular case, the firefighter that fell had probably followed other firefighters into unsafe situations and had nothing happen to him. So when it comes to decision making, we want to make sure that we remember the basics, we assess situations, continue to process, and not become complacent about our surroundings. Our next report is 07-748. It was submitted by an ALS provider in a mostly paid combination department from FEMA Region 10. The reporter was also involved in the event. Here's Todd.
We responded to a male adolescent who had fallen approximately 25 feet down the face of a 75-degree waterfall. Our personnel made access to the patient by using rope and climbing down a well-worn trail that was approximately 45 degrees. The decision was made by the senior person on the shift to place the patient on a backboard and then into a Stokes basket. It should be noted that the water levels were low at the waterfall, and the other access to the patient was over a narrow path above deep water. Ropes were sent down to the patient's location, and a safe, stable area was identified to immobilize the patient for his trip up the hill. The senior person was with the patient. I advised him I would send down two ropes for the Stokes basket and a third rope for the rescuers. I was told not to. The team below proceeded to tie one rope to the Stokes basket, and then four firefighters held onto the Stokes basket while people above started to pull the patient up. This caused quite a bit of confusion, and multiple bystanders had to help out due to the extra weight. Two other firefighters then climbed up the face of the waterfall hand over hand using the rope that was sent down to be used as a second safety for the patient. None of the firefighters had safety gear on, and none were tied in. Our department has no formal training in high angle rescue, and we have no life safety rope that is available for service. My lessons learned. A command structure must be in place so there's no question who will be making operational decisions. A safety officer should be in place on all rescues. Identify where training is needed. This should be based on geography and the response area. There should be adequate equipment available for the safety of the firefighters and patients.
Thanks, Todd. As we take this event apart, just from the decision-making aspect, we see emergency responders that are called to the scene of an incident, even though they have not received, or at least according to the report, don't have any formal training in high-angle rescue. There is the compulsion to act because we've been called to assist. So when we go back and look at the decision-making that takes place, in this particular case, there would be some trouble that was realized by the decision-makers because they had some mismatched expectations. They believed they could perform the rescue. However, they didn't have the proper background or equipment to make it happen. So they piecemeal the event. They extract the patient there, but it doesn't sound like or look like from the account here that it went particularly well. One of the pitfalls we fall into is at the end of the events like this, we'll say that, well, no one was injured, so that it was a success. But in a lot of cases, a lot of times it's more a matter of luck. In this particular environment, once the fire department or rescuers arrived and realized that the incident was beyond their expectations and or capabilities, and knowing that is making sure you're versed on what the current practices and standards are, then it would have been time to call in a special operations team. So we're going to take a quick break here, and we'll be back in just a couple of seconds with the next two reports.
Check out the works of Gary Klein, Malcolm Gladwell, and Dr. Robert Helmreich for more information on crew resource management and decision-making. All three have done extensive study in the field that is readily adaptable to the fire service. You may also want to check out the work most recently completed by Chief Richard Gassaway from the Roseville, Minnesota Fire Department. Chief Gassaway's doctoral thesis addresses fire service decision-making. You can also download a primer on crew resource management and a PowerPoint presentation from the resources section of www.firefighternearmiss.com.
Radio at firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters.
Okay, we're back. We're going to now look at a couple of reports that were in the system that have some examples of some very effective decision-making that was made that had good outcomes. First report is 07-1187, submitted by a firefighter from a combination department in FEMA Region 3. The reporter was involved in the event, and this report, just as a reminder, has been edited to focus on the decision-making elements. Todd?
My event happened while returning from an investigation of a property damage collision which involved a vehicle that slid off the roadway and struck a tree. After clearing the call, we traveled westbound. As we approached a bridge, we noticed a vehicle in some sort of collision at the far west end of the bridge. The collision was half on the roadway and half on the sidewalk. I assumed the vehicle had spun out as a result of the icy conditions. I was operating our tiller truck and traveling between 30 and 40 miles per hour. Our tiller truck is equipped with independent suspension, ABS, and an engine brake. The retarder was in the off position. As I applied the brakes and felt the ABS activate, the truck lost control. I was able to control my vehicle and get it to stop without incident. We positioned the tractor-drawn aerial to protect the scene and angled across the center lane. I left the vehicle in drive, and I did not apply the parking brake. I continued to hold the service brake with my foot while paying close attention to the traffic in my left-hand driver's mirror. There was about a dozen cars approaching us coming from the bridge from the eastbound side, traveling towards us at a high rate of speed, too fast for the poor, icy morning road conditions. What appeared to be a small, dark green foreign sedan lost traction and began to spin completely around 360 degrees. The driver had no control of the vehicle, and it continued to spin in our direction. In hopes of saving our crew of injury and damage to the vehicle, I took my foot off the service brake, applied my foot gently to the accelerator, and pulled forward. My tillerman started yelling that we were about to be hit. I pulled my vehicle forward approximately one length of the truck, which is about 57 feet. The vehicle, without colliding with anything, came to rest where we were sitting. I feel that if it was not for my years of experience as an emergency vehicle operator and a professional truck driver, that this near miss could have been considerably worse. My lessons learned. Good situational awareness, decision-making, communications, and training come into play.
Thanks, Todd. This particular event, the driver took an action that would be sort of talked about as maybe going against the grain of where we are coming from with positioning apparatus on the road. As he looked at the situation, the one thing that was sort of left out of the report there was that they were positioned far enough upstream from the original collision they responded to that they were had erred really on the side of safety. When it comes right down to it, we get to these points where we have to make split-second decisions. Had the vehicle collided with the tiller truck, the driver of the small car would have been killed or more severely injured or actually incredibly severely injured by the impact of hitting the large truck. So the driver made a choice, made a decision. He pulled the truck forward, clearing the path for the car to come to rest without making a collision, and everybody walks away from it. So how do we get to that point? What is it that makes some of us just stay in place and someone decide, make a decision to move forward? The driver takes a look at this by saying he had previous experience. He did a situation assessment. He made a decision to not only save the ladder truck, but also probably the life of the other individual there. And as we sit down and go through this particular incident, we can probably be split along equal lines as far as, you know, let the car hit the truck versus, well, that was a pretty good decision that driver made. The point being that when you take this incident apart, the reporter does a pretty good job of pointing out why he did what he did. And made a decision to move the truck. He also didn't just mash down on the accelerator, but he applied his foot gently to it to make sure the truck just pulls forward enough to get it out of the way. So, again, previous experience comes into play, which we talked about when it comes to recognition prime decision-making. Knowledge of the apparatus also contributes to a good decision-making, and then a rapid situation assessment. That's going to bring us to our final report of the of this particular edition. This is going to be report number 05-321. It's submitted by a firefighter from a volunteer department in FEMA Region 4. The reporter was involved in the event, and this report has also been edited to focus on the decision-making aspects. Here's Todd.
I was alerted by a pager for a kitchen fire reported across the street from my residence. As I exited my home and made my way across the street, there was fire through the roof within 30 seconds of the initial notification. The house was loaded with ammunition to include one lamp that had a very large diameter live shell as its center post. This live shell did blow. It was a surround and drown from the get-go, with live ammunition continually exploding. At the back of the house was a large storage barn filled with 20-pound propane cylinders and a 200-gallon gasoline tank used to fill trucks. My lessons learned, the safety issue. Even residential structures need pre-planning. Thankfully, the ammunition started going off early as the first engines arrived. Taking initial command, I recommended to the first lieutenant, who took over command, that I felt an exterior attack was safest. Turned out to be a good decision.
Thanks, Todd. As we wrap up this edition of Listen and Learn, we take a look at an event that probably most of us have not encountered, and that's the impact or effect of live ammunition when we arrive at an event. As was mentioned earlier in here, one of the ways we can improve our decision-making is by looking at the experiences of others and then sharing experiences that we've had to help others learn from what we do. Emergency services decision-making falls into two categories, basically. There's the life-threatening, where there's no discretionary time available, and I think that probably plays right to where the tiller truck was almost struck by the car, to the non-life-threatening events when there's plenty of discretionary time. Decision-making errors are usually broken down into two categories, and there are errors of omission, where we forget things, where we overlook something or we're not familiar with it, and then there are commissions, where we specifically violate a policy that leads to an error. And once we go down the path of purposely violating policy, we leave ourselves wide open for a whole host of problems. In order to make real good decisions, we need three things. We need information, experience, and knowledge. Through using the Near Miss Reporting System as one of your tools, you can help improve your experience base. We're starting to get good feedback from the fire service about the reports that are being submitted. So as you listen to these podcasts, you're encouraged to take a look through your own time in the fire service and spend about 10 or 15 minutes to make a difference. So becoming a better decision maker requires extensive and continuous focus on making sure you're improving your knowledge, evaluating your personal experience, and then learning how to process information. Experience, training, communication, and pre-planning are great ways to provide improved decision making, and you don't necessarily have to be right there getting your eyebrows singed to learn. Since we usually operate in an information deficit in most of our emergencies, it's imperative that everyone in that operation tree, from the dispatcher to the care provider, pass along information to the incident commander. The information that is withheld leaves gaps in our IC's process, and those gaps can lead to decision errors, which can lead to injury. The other elements of crew resource management, communication, situational awareness, teamwork, and task allocation, all of which will be featured in the future and in our previous podcast, all feed to support the decision-making element, and they all support proper decisions. So as we close out this edition, we want you to make sure you be vigilant, stay focused, and be sure to listen and learn.
If you have a comment on this program, drop us a line at radio@firehouse.com. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned to firehouse.com for more broadcasts like these. Or visit our website at www.firehouse.com/radio.